My guilty pleasure is watching baseball. I love baseball. If you've been around here very long, you know that. I love the hitting, the pitching, all the strategy. It just makes for a wonderful evening of entertainment or afternoon of entertainment, especially when the Astros clinch the division and get home field advantage against the dreaded White Sox. So anyway, enough on that. But I love baseball. I really do. I enjoy watching it. I enjoy baseball movies. I mean, some of the greatest movies ever are baseball movies. Field of Dreams, The Rookie, Angels in the Outfield, and the best all-time baseball movie of all time, if not maybe the best movie ever, The Sandlot. Man, I'm telling you, that's the story of my childhood. I mean, that is my childhood. I was Ham, okay? For those of you that know that, go look it up. But I wasn't a catcher because I played out in the field. My brother was a catcher. I didn't like squatting down on my knees all the time. Anyway, baseball, what's so cool about baseball, is a microcosm of life. We see all the different flavors and different varieties of life in baseball. Take, for instance, an old story that I heard about three umpires. They were talking, and one of them says, there's balls and there's strikes, and I call them the way they are. That would reflect a very traditional view of truth, okay? That's the way we view truth. We can see that in baseball. The second umpire said, no. There's balls and there's strikes, and I call them the way I see them. That's a different view of truth. That's kind of a moderately relativistic view of truth. It's what I see. I'll call it the way I see it. And the third umpire says, no. There's balls and there's strikes, and they ain't nothing till I call them. That would be a radically progressive or postmodern extreme relativism view of truth. Okay, so let me explain kind of how that would work out. Okay, here's a picture. Here's some screens of Altuve at bat. Altuve is about to beat the Yankees with a walk-off home run. I was there that day. Really cool. Anyway, when you're watching TV, of course, I can't see it on the field, but television gives you a box there to show the strike zone. And when the ball goes across the plate, it shows, you can see that, where it went, okay? So a traditional view of truth would say if it's inside the strike zone, it's a strike. If it's outside, it's a ball. That's just, you know, that's the way it is. But if you look at that third frame over there, some umpires, they have what's called an expanded strike zone. This is where they call it the way they see it. And some umpires may be calling them wide and sometimes a little bit high. Now, if they do that consistently for all the players, both sides, then the batters adjust to it within the second and third inning, and they'll say, listen, he's calling a little high and outside. If it's out there, if it's just off the plate, go ahead and go for it. He's going to call it on you. So they adjust to the truth as that umpire sees it. But then other umpires, like that third umpire says, they ain't nothing till I call them. Look at where the catcher is positioning to catch that ball. Okay, he's up there in that upper left-hand corner. It'd be his upper right-hand corner, because they're trying to get the pitch, and maybe they think Altuve is going to swing and miss it when it's up at that point. And the umpire may go ahead and call it a strike because he knows the pitcher's intent by where the catcher puts the glove. Well, that would be calling it the way he wants it, just desiring that, going with the pitcher's intent. It matters in life, you know. That just lets us know about like how truth is going. Over the last several generations, the word truth is been expanded, just like some umpires' strike zone. It's been expanded to mean all kinds of things that in a more traditional view of truth would not count as truth, such that the word truth doesn't mean as much anymore, doesn't mean what it used to mean to a lot of people. So much so that in 2016, the Oxford Dictionary, that has a word of the year every year, they labeled post-truth their word of the year. Now, before some of you who are having flashbacks to a discussion of metaphysics in your philosophy class, I'll get to the point, okay? The way we understand truth matters a lot. It matters a lot. And I think that's something Jesus was undoing, the way people saw truth in his day, and he would continue to do that today. He would undo some of the ways we view truth. Here's why it matters. It's because it has a lot to do with whether or not we will believe Jesus, whether or not we will follow Jesus. As a matter of fact, when Jesus came, Jesus undid the truth claims of the Jewish religious leaders of his day that were leading his people. They were known as Pharisees and Sadducees and teachers of the law. And in Jesus' first big public sermon, early on in his ministry, He undid a lot of the truth claims of the religious leaders and just kind of blew everyone's mind. That sermon has been called the Sermon on the Mount because Jesus preached it on a mountainside that was sloping down into the shores of the Sea of Galilee in an area that looked like just kind of a natural amphitheater. It was a great place for Jesus to speak to a large crowd. And so he spoke to them and he undid a lot of the truths that the Pharisees and Sadducees were claiming, things that they had added to what God had inspired the prophets and writers of the law of old. That message, that sermon is found in the book of Matthew, the first gospel in the New Testament, chapters 5, 6, and 7. So if you have a Bible, I would invite you to open it to the book of Matthew, chapter 5, verse 20. If you don't have a Bible, we'd love to give you one. You can pick one up at the Welcome Center on the way out. If you're following along on the screen, we'll put the words up there or on your phone. You can just scroll down until you get to Matthew. If you have a paper copy of a Bible, it's about 3/4 of the way through. Matthew's the first book of the New Testament. So in the book of Matthew, the Sermon on the Mount that Jesus preached that's found in Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7. The Sermon on the Mount has been described as Jesus' manifesto. He laid out the groundwork for his 3-year ministry in this sermon. And he began it with a group with what's called the Beatitudes or the blessings. They're beautiful sayings that describe what the heart of a follower of God would be like. Blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness. They are beautiful sayings. So beautiful that you could probably buy a plaque of them for half price at Hobby Lobby. That's just what the Beatitudes are. Great way to start his message off. But then he kind of turns and he begins describing what he expects of God. He paints a really demanding picture of what people should do who follow him. And it sounds like when you're reading through the first part of the Sermon on the Mount, like Jesus expected perfection. And listen to why. Listen to how he began that section. Matthew 5 verse 20, Jesus said, "For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven." Man, the Pharisees and teachers of the law, they were known for holding one of the most strict interpretations of the law and the prophets of the Hebrew Bible, what we now call the Old Testament. Man, the life they described, if the Pharisees and Sadducees couldn't live up to it, who could? The life Jesus was describing was practically impossible, and he was doing it for a reason. But here, I think the people listening to Jesus, they were used to that kind of talk, though, from the Pharisees. The Pharisees were argumentative, dogmatic, critical. They were perfectionists. And they liked to show people how perfect they were and how not perfect everyone else was. I'm sure the people didn't mind seeing Jesus throw the Pharisees under the bus. But as he was talking about these expectations that he said, I'm guessing they probably were just ignoring or dismissing a lot of the things that Jesus said about anger, adultery, divorce, telling the truth, going the second mile, loving your enemies, and generosity. Kind of like what we do. Kind of like what we do when we don't want to believe something we know is true. We just kind of move on and just kind of look over that, pick and choose what we want to believe. Well, I don't want you to get too hung up on this standard of perfection, thinking that Jesus' standards are too high, because that wasn't his point. We don't have time to go over that part of the Sermon on the Mount as much. We've done that before. But what I want you to see is what Jesus is demanding is not more righteous deeds and acts on the part of humans like you and me. What he's really pointing to are more righteous hearts that we get by God's grace that God gives us, the hearts that God puts in us. Jesus wants your heart. If he has your heart, your actions will follow. And what he most wants you to do is to love him and love other people. Jesus wants your heart. That became apparent as Jesus continued to speak. What he said next caused the crowd to lean in close and listen to him, because he began to talk about prayer and how to pray. And it wasn't some complex formula with hard words and phrases like the Pharisees prayed. It was simple. We call it a model prayer. And we're going to come back and talk about that at the end of this series. He undid the way the Pharisees prayed. Then Jesus talked about worry and anxiety. That's something all of us need to hear about. All of us struggle with worry at times and anxiety at times, and some a lot more than others. And if that's you, Jesus' words were so comforting, so understanding. So people were really listening to him. He went on to talk about telling all of us to mind our own business and take care of own up to our own shortcomings before we try to deal with other people's. Then he gave them hope. I love what he said next. He said, just ask God for what you need, he'll give it. Seek him. You'll find him. Knock and he'll open up to you. Seek him. God promises you'll find him. What they didn't yet realize is he wasn't just talking about God. He was God. He is God. They were looking at God in the flesh, Jesus, Jesus himself. He was truth in the flesh. Now, I may have lost some of you who are not yet convinced of that. You're not convinced Jesus is God, or if he is God, you don't like what he's done, or you're just like, you're rejecting him, but you're here for whatever reason. Well, let me just tell you, what you probably need to do first is realize that the Jesus you may be rejecting is not the real Jesus. You may be picking up a caricature or a misrepresentation of Jesus, and a lot of Christians have done a lot to not represent Jesus real well and put words in Jesus' mouth that he never said and put attitudes and actions and attach them to Jesus that he never said. So you need to realize you may not be rejecting Jesus. You may be rejecting some other persons. And you know, it's our bad, okay? We own it. We own it. We're not always the best representations of Jesus. We try to be, we need to be, but and some people don't even try. Some people are just way off. Jesus talks about them, and we'll get to that in a moment. But what I would just say to you, if you struggle with whether or not Jesus is God or whether or not his truth is the truth, seek him. Honestly, seek him. And he promises you will find him. After Jesus tells the crowd gathered around him on that hillside to seek him, he then gives them some directions on how. This is where it gets kind of tough. Flip over to chapter 7, find verse 13, Matthew 7, 13. This is what Jesus said when he's saying seek him. Knock, ask, seek. He said, enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it. See, people today don't like to talk about narrow. Mm-mm. We don't want umpires calling balls and strikes in our life. We don't want people telling us, anybody, God, Jesus, anybody else, telling us what's right and wrong, unless we're up to the bat, okay? And then we're a bat. We don't want an umpire calling him the way he sees him. We want him to call him right. We want him to get it right. We want to be treated fair. Unless, of course, life is kind of hard and those balls are coming in too fast to hit. And we can't tell the difference between a curve and a slider. So then we want to take over and we want to call the shots. And we want to call them all balls so that we can get a walk and get on base. Because what's fair is what I want, not what is real, what was right or wrong. You see, we don't want a narrow way if it's hard. We want to make our own choices. We want tolerance. And we want all choices to be equal. You have your truth, and I have my truth. That's kind of the way we want to call it if it's convenient for us. And I'm sure there were people in Jesus' audience that day who thought exactly that way. Human nature hasn't changed a bit in 2,000 years. But I'm convinced of this. There were others who were tracking with Jesus, and they were realizing what he was saying was true. And there is truth. There is the way things are, not just the way I see them or a way I want to call them. And they began wondering, okay, if this is true, where's the gate? And am I on that wide road or am I on that narrow road? That's a really good question to ask. And I hope you're asking that yourself. Ask yourself, what gate have I walked through? What road am I following? And if you don't really know what road you're on, you're probably on the wide road because that's the easy one that we follow if we're not intentionally walking towards and following Jesus. Let me just give a warning, though, to those of you that choose to walk through the gate of Jesus and follow the narrow road. If you step over the line of faith, you will soon find yourself walking against the current. Jesus was telling the truth when he said, it is a narrow way and it is a difficult road. It is indeed a narrow, difficult road, but I promise you, the road to Jesus, the gate through Jesus, it leads to life. And that's what Jesus was talking about in this sermon. Here's another warning that he gave also. It can be confusing sometimes when you choose the narrow road. It can be confusing who to listen to along the road because Jesus warned that there would be false prophets claiming he said this or that. Look what he says in verse 15. He goes, watch out for false prophets. He is not talking about Pharisees, Sadducees, or teachers of the law at this point because none of them were considered or claimed to be prophets. He is talking about people who claim to be followers of Jesus Christ who are actually false prophets. He says, watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves. And then he tells us how to know. He said, by their fruit, you will recognize them. Listen, the basic fruit of false prophets, false teachers, is self-interest. They're in it for themselves. We see that. You know, whether it's building a name for themselves and building a platform where you think they're all wonderful and awesome, or whether it's caving in consistently to a changing culture so they won't be left out and be ostracized by the mainstream. It's all self-interest. That's what leads false prophets. And we've seen examples of both of those. We have seen the fall of a lot of high-profile preachers in the last few years. And whether people could see it before they fell or see it as they, it was pretty easy to spot when you realize that they were just making a name for themselves and they were using the people in their flocks for their own personal gain. And that's one type of false prophet. But there's a lot of other false prophets that are much more seductive and much more difficult to spot. These false prophets, all they do is talk about love and they never talk about the truth. They just talk about love. Love is, love is, love is. And they're all about love and acceptance and tolerance. But the minute you speak the whole truth of the gospel, the whole truth that Jesus has given us in the gospels and in the letters of the New Testament, the minute you talk about everything that Jesus said, they will turn on you in a heartbeat. And with anger in their eyes, they will call you a bigot. How insensitive, uncaring. They're false prophets too. They have no time for the real Jesus either. Just the Jesus, just the loving side of Jesus that they want to use to co-opt Jesus' truth. That's why Jesus went on to say this, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Again, is it God's interest or self-interest that we follow? That's how we know what a false prophet is. But how do we know what the will of God in heaven is? Well, Jesus makes that pretty clear. I want you to notice how he points. He points to himself. If you want to know what God's will is, read Jesus' words. Read the words that he's inspired in what we call the gospels and the letters. He summarizes here in the point of following him and knowing the right way as he summarizes his famous sermon, his manifesto in verse 24 of chapter 7. As he comes near the end, he says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine, okay, his words, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. During the time I've lived here in Southern Missouri County, I've seen a lot of homes down in Surfside that weren't built on real strong foundations crumble and fall because their foundation wasn't deep enough. And I think it's very possible that the people listening to Jesus that day could see examples in front of their eyes of Jesus' parable. There along the sandy shores of the Sea of Galilee, they may well have seen the debris of crumbled homes that had fallen and crashed right next to homes that were still standing because those homes were built by builders who dug down 10 feet down through that alluvial sand next to the Sea of Galilee down to the bedrock and had their foundation all the way down there. And they saw those houses still standing. You see, when the winter rains came and the Jordan River overflowed its banks as it flowed into the Sea of Galilee and raised the sea level of the Sea of Galilee there and during the winter, and those waves came crashing back and forth, they crashed down the houses that were just built on top of the sand. But the ones who dug down to bedrock were still standing. And the people listening to Jesus, I am sure, understood exactly what he meant, as I think you do too. You build your life on the foundation of Jesus Christ, or you are building it on shifting sand. And when the storms come, it will fall out from underneath you, and you will see your life begin to fall apart. Jesus is the gate. He is the gate to the narrow way, to the narrow road that leads to life. And his words are the only sure foundation. Let me be as clear as possible, as clear as Jesus was being clear. There is no middle ground. It's all Jesus or none of Jesus. You don't take the parts of Jesus you like. It's all or none. You have to make a choice. And the choices have eternal consequences. Those storms that Jesus was talking about, they can be the storms of life, but they're also the storms of judgment that will come someday on all of us. Maybe not today. And perhaps you're still thinking, perhaps some of you, you're still trying to decide whether or not Jesus really is God's son, whether or not Jesus is really the truth, whether or not he's really worth following. But what I would say to you is seek him. He promises if you seek him, he will be found. Ask, and he'll give you what you need. Knock, he'll open the door to you. That's a promise direct from Jesus' words himself. Please keep asking, seeking, knocking, but also know this. Keep this in mind. You never know when the storms of life are going to come crashing in. And at that point, it is too late to build your foundation. I would encourage you, if you're seeking Jesus, seek him now. Don't wait. You know, through the years, I've watched a lot of people I know, not just in this fellowship, but friends that I've known for life, who claim to be Christ followers, but did not build their lives on his words, on his foundation, his truth. And I've watched so many of them there. I've watched their lives just crumble when the storms of life came. And so much of their life just fell apart, everything they had invested their life in. Jesus said, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth. And the truth will set you free. That narrow road, that difficult road, it is also a very freeing road. It is a road that when the storms come and you're sitting above the waters, you realize, worth it, worth it. I've seen so many people choose to believe other truths because the truths of Jesus were just not convenient to what they wanted. And they're suffering now for it. But here's the deal about truth. Truth is not relative. It's not the way we see it or what we decide to call it. Truth is truth. As a matter of fact, Jesus is truth. He made that claim himself when he said, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me. Jesus is truth. You want to know what truth is? Look at Jesus. He's the measure. He's the foundation. Here's an example. One time Jesus was with his disciples and they were in a boat going across the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus was tired from a long day of speaking and he had fallen asleep in the front of the boat. It's a pretty good sized boat. And he's with these people. Many of his disciples were fishermen and a storm came up on the Sea of Galilee and it really began to rock the boat. So much so that these guys who were used to the sea were frightened. They were terrified. And they were sitting there, they thought at any time now this boat's gonna capsize or the water's gonna fill it up. And there's Jesus asleep and they're trying to wake him up saying, Jesus, Jesus, we're gonna die. You know what? They weren't going to die. Jesus wasn't gonna let that happen that day. The truth was not that they were about to die. The truth was not the storm. Truth was asleep in the front of the boat. And when truth stood up and said, peace be still, everything calmed down. Jesus is truth. You need a foundation? It's Jesus. You need to know what is right or wrong? Follow Jesus. To follow him, though, you've got to listen and read his words and read the words of the followers that he chose to follow him and explain things. We call those the letters that we find in the New Testament. So many people, including some of my best friends, have chosen to believe other truths and they're suffering for it. Listen, if you're not convinced, I want to challenge you. Explore that claim. Explore Jesus' claim that he is the way, he is the truth, he is the life. Seek him. Don't take my word for it. Get a Bible. Like I said, we'll give you one. You can pick one up at the Welcome Center. Get a Bible and read the first four Gospels. Just read them. You know, this power that you may feel when you're gathered together with us here in this room or you're watching online, but you're with God's people and gathered together with them, this power that you will feel that when you're reading his word as well. And when you're with other believers and talking about that. Read the Bible, read the Gospels, the first four books of what we call the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, four different eyewitness accounts of Jesus' life. Because it's not just any book. And these are not just any books. They are books inspired by God. They are alive. And they will speak to your heart. And they will cut through all the other things, all the other competing ideas for truth and truth claims. Jesus will cut through to the heart of life. And you will see that he is the creator. That he is right. You might even want to ask someone you know to read along with you. Like read some and then talk about it. Kind of work it back and forth. And ask someone if they understand something that maybe you're struggling with. Let's go back to Matthew 7, though, and see one last thing. And this is how the crowd responded to Jesus' sermon. It's really interesting. Matthew 7, verse 28. When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. Do you know why he taught with authority? Because Jesus existed before time began. Father, Son, and Spirit have always been existent before this universe came to being. God spoke them into being. Jesus was there in the beginning. He was the Word in the beginning. The reason he spoke with authority, because he created the mountain they were sitting on and the air they were breathing. The reason he spoke with authority about God's ways, not like the teachers of the law, is because he's the one that inspired all those laws in the prophets of old in the Hebrew Bible. The crowds were amazed, but that doesn't mean they believed. Amazed is not a description of faith. That same word, amazed, ekpleso, in the Greek, was also used at other points to describe crowds that were amazed that didn't believe in him. They were amazed like, oh, I can't believe this. It's amazing, it's crazy. They were amazed thinking, wow, this teacher is different and he speaks with authority. But that doesn't mean that they believed and they had faith in that authority. Some were convinced and they continued to follow Jesus. Some were not. What about you? When you hear God's word, when you hear stories of Jesus Christ or his followers, are you amazed or are you convinced? I would encourage you, don't just be amazed and walk away. Just have your ears tickled and say, well, that was interesting. Walk the narrow way of Jesus. Walk that way, try that way, and discover truth and life. I can't help but think some of you are just right there. You are ready to express your faith in Jesus. You want to build your life on the firm foundation of Jesus Christ. If you are, I want to encourage you to ask Jesus to take control of your life today. Ask him to let you walk through the gate of his life into real life. I can help you do that with a simple prayer. And here's what I'll pray. I'll help you. I'll give you some words to pray. You can pray silently in your heart. But just say, Jesus, I know you are God. I know you are the way, the truth, and the life. And I trust you. I put my life on your foundation. I admit I'm a sinner, and I can't live up to the perfection you talked about here. But I know your life counts for my righteousness. When you died on the cross, you paid for my sins and put your righteousness in me. That's what you would pray. If you're ready to do that and step over the line of faith, pray with me, okay? I'd ask all of you to bow your heads and close your eyes for just a moment. Pray for those, if you're already a follower of Christ, pray for those that are considering stepping over the line of faith. Just say, Jesus, I believe you are truth. I believe your words. I can tell you're speaking to my heart right now. I want to follow the narrow way. I want to walk through that gate. I want to embrace you. I believe you lived a perfect life as a substitute for mine. I believe you died on a cross as a substitute for paying the penalty for my sin. And I believe you are God who came back to life and conquered death. Show me the way, Jesus. I want to follow you. I want to walk up that narrow road that leads to life. Show me how to follow you. Forgive my sins. Take control. Amen. If you just pray that prayer with me, man, let someone know. You could text the word faith, F-A-I-T-H, to 95577. Some of you already have your phones out. Just text the word faith to 95577. If you just pray that prayer with me. If you can't remember, ask someone at the Next Step Center, the God Marks Resource Center, and they'll tell you. And then enter into a conversation with us. As a matter of fact, walk by the Welcome Center and pick up a Bible. We may have some over here, a New Testament of the Bible we'll give you that you can begin reading. We want to help you take your next steps with God. We want to help you walk that narrow path. We'll have folks over here in the prayer corner to your left if you need someone to pray with, and I'll be over here at the Connection Center if you need someone to just want to ask me some questions about what I talked about. But I'll be there for you, and we'll have folks there to pray for you. If God is leading you to make a decision, make that. Follow Jesus. Trust me. It's worth it.